or to find out if we're coming to a city near you. That does it for the show. We have job openings hiring for our video news production fellowship and internship program. Go to democracynow.org. Special thanks to Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal for Friday, April the 29th, 2016. Our last show in April. Ah, the months go by. The years go by. Oh, well. But there's always a lot happening. This is Jake Koronick. I'm happy to be with you today for the WHFR Journal. First of all, I want to thank everyone who pledged during our annual pledge drive. If our loyal listeners won't support us, there's nobody else. That's the way we go. We sort of like Bernie Sanders. We don't ask for corporate support. And although we do some underwriting with small businesses in town, if that's right for you, not commercials, but we will thank you if you want to do things for us, give us money or products or services and so on. But thank you for those that did make a pledge. And if you haven't given us the check or the money order yet, when you get that letter in the mail from our general manager, Susan McGraw, by all means, send it back as quickly as you can. We do need to have all of the pledges that were promised processed by May the 25th, when we're going to do that drawing for somebody to get a chance to have a new Ford automobile, subject to negotiation, in terms of what it is, for a weekend. That's usually Friday afternoon through Monday morning. And that'd be a lot of fun. And that's thanks to our friends at Village Ford, one of those underwriting people. You know, I can't say anything good or bad about Village Ford, but we can say thank you. And giving somebody a chance, one of our $30 pledgers or above, to have a new car for a weekend. Kind of cool, I think, and that's what we try to do. So, by the way, of course, as is always the case, we're not going to ask you for money more than that 1 week. But I just want to mention not only thank you to those that have already pledged, please fulfill that pledge as soon as you can, but also if you feel guilty because you haven't yet, and yes, you should, if you're listening to the show and other shows at WHFR, and you know we deserve it because we don't get much money from anybody else, we are running the place at bare bones expenses, let me tell you. You can go online anytime to our website, whfr.fm. There's a Radiothon 2016 banner in the center. Click on that. You can see some pledge incentive gifts there, and you can work it out through your credit card. Or even online, you can request an envelope be sent to you in the mail for your check or money order. But thank you very much for that. I want to remind people that missed last week's show. Oh, boy, it was a hot one. We had our what's become sort of our Radiothon annual show with Dearborn Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. And he was here pretty much the whole hour and got here as soon as he could after his usually has a luncheon commitment, I've noticed. So he usually gets here a couple minutes past the hour. That was good. We got to catch up on some stories that we had to do. But we actually broke the story to Dearborn that as yet has not been picked up by the papers. But I think people want to know. What's interesting is that in the proposed budget, that Mayor Riley and his administration have submitted to the city council, which is being discussed and will be debated more. It has to be in place before July 1st. That's when the fiscal year of the city starts for the next year period. In other words, it's July 1st to June 30th every year. Plus, it's a projection 2 years beyond that, too. And that's good, because just looking at things 1 year at a time is not planning for the future. And things do change in terms of, in this case, the partial millage, the small millage supplement that was voted in 2011 of 3.5 mils is going to go away. It was only voted to exist for 6 years. The assumption was property values of homes will have gone up enough to cover the losses sustained to the city government right after the, whatever you want to call it, depression, recession of 2008. And people in Dearborn were paying much lower taxes because their property was worth much less. But when the city asked them for the supplement to make up not all, but some of the difference that they've lost, they said yes. And so the city has been, to speak for the city here, trying to watch their budget and to cut as needed to make sure that costs don't rise too high. One of the things that I'm sure the mayor would say that they felt they had to do in that period of time, the last 6 years, was to sell the old city hall to Art Space and buy another building a little bit to the west of the central area of Dearborn, a little closer to West Dearborn than the old city hall was. And that building is now called the Dearborn Administrative Center. It is bigger, it is more energy efficient, and they can actually run the place for less money. And that's what they've said anyway. And there were, of course, move-in costs and upgrades and certain bits of new furniture and so on as would be required, but they didn't have to pay for the repairs needed on the old city hall, which would have been about, I think they said about $3 million or more, and the old parking structure over there, or the parking structure that was there by the old city hall, was in need of repair too. And so Art Space is going to take care of that. They're also, although this was an extra $1.7 million, but they're moving the Veterans Memorial from the old city hall grounds to the front of the Centennial Library. But unlike the fountain that was there that broke and would have cost the city $100,000, I think I said, to fix it, and then $20,000 a year to keep it maintained after that. Well, they didn't expect that when they first got the donation that caused the original installation of that fountain. So the fountain's gone, and they're using that front area facing from the north side of Centennial Library to Michigan Avenue. That area is being under redevelopment now for the, as I said, Veterans Memorial. So the large stone plaques of names of Dearborn veterans are going to be moved over when the grounds are redesigned. It'll be a new sort of park-like area that will be there right next to the sidewalk running along the south side of Michigan Avenue. Anyway, cost savings, always important. But it said, and we were the first ones, I guess, even though the papers said, well, there's a proposed budget out there, and there's going to be some sessions, and we'll tell you about those coming up where the public can go and make comments. The first one happened last Thursday that the public could have attended, but we, the media, only found out about it 6 hours before. So not a lot of time to plan to go to something 6 p.m. when you get the news just before noon on that same day. So if you wanted to speak out about it, and also it's 11 pages long with not really big print, okay? And so it took me about 3 hours to read it closely. But after I did that, I realized, and I asked the mayor, what about the tax increase or the renewal of the 3.5 mils? And he spoke very honestly in the last 10 minutes of the show, which, if you missed it, is archived for you to listen to anytime at our website, whfr.fm. Click on the homepage, click on the talk shows button, and then click on WHFR Journal. That's the name of the show. And then choose the date. Last Friday was April 22nd. And you can listen to it or download it and listen to it at your leisure from your home computer. Or whatever other media device you happen to be using. So by all means, I think it's a show you need to listen to. Here's the mayor talking in detail about a lot of topics. Now, I only got through about half of them, so we're definitely going to invite him back in a couple of months because we never get through all the topics, all the questions that I have. I'm a guy that's full of questions. What can I say? But we are the first ones to bring up to the fact to the public on any media that I know of in this area that, yes, there will have to be either a renewal of those 3.5 mils or some other new tax to make up the fact that the city is going to be losing at the end of this year, when that millage goes away from 2011, about $10 million a year. I think it's about that, 10 or 11. Also, the city is losing money from the loss of what's called personal property tax. Really, it's business property tax. It's the things on the property owned by businesses, like inside the buildings, the computers, the desks, okay, the machines that make things. That's what was called by state government personal property. There was never a tax, to my knowledge, of an individual's property inside their house. Okay. That whole concept was ditched by our state legislature, thanks to the Republican majority and Governor Rick Snyder. And so cities now have a lot of money to make up for. Now, they are getting some supplements from a group called SESA, but it won't cover all the losses. This year, the city of Dearborn lost 37% of the personal property taxes that they expected, and they didn't get all the money from CESA to make up for that. So every city is getting stuck for losses. And in Dearborn, it's particularly serious because Ford Motor Company has a big business here, especially Ford. Those dollars went a long way to keeping our taxes lower. So we had a brief but pointed discussion about that. Mayor O'Reilly, and I want to sum this up if you didn't hear it, he felt that, he said that renewal of that tax is anticipated but not presumed. Okay, so they don't even know the city council will endorse a vote to do that. Mayor O'Reilly said very clearly, and I agree with him, and again, all opinions on this show, including mine and his, are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College. All right? Nonetheless, and they don't tell us what to say, thank you very much, Henry Ford College. But my feeling is that it's absolutely true that property taxes vary too much from year to year, depending on the economy. And you need a stable amount of money coming in to run any business, including city governments and schools. And property taxes aren't the way to do it by themselves. Of course, the state of Michigan also has an income tax, as you all know. And they have a sales tax, too. Okay. Still, I think the city of Dearborn, just like other cities around, might want to consider something that's more stable. In other words, they could choose. I don't know what they're going to choose because it hasn't been brought up yet at the city council. But it's going to happen in the next couple of years. Certainly sometime next year in 2017, they're going to have to talk about it because the millage won't be there by the end of this year. So they're going to have to figure out what are they going to do to make up for the loss of funds. Yes, I know that Ford Motor is going to be expanding their facilities in Dearborn to a tune of about $1.2 billion, but that probably includes some expenses for computers and other things internally, not necessarily just for the buildings themselves and the value that they add to the land that Ford already owns and is already paying taxes on. But, of course, they'll have to pay more tax based on the fact that at this new campus, as they're calling it, for Ford Motor Company, will obviously raise the value of the property in general. But the stuff inside the building might be part of that $1.2 billion. We're not sure about that, but that's probably true. I did ask, has Ford asked for any sort of discount yet on its taxes to the city of Dearborn? And Mayor O'Reilly said very clearly no. But that's at this point. Even though they've committed to build it here in Dearborn, they haven't said they wouldn't use their team of lawyers to fight that. In fact, I have a story here somewhere about Fiat Chrysler is going to be investing a small amount by comparison, not $1.2 billion, but only $74.7 million. So less than $100 million. Three-quarters of $100 million at the Trenton Engine Plant, where, by the way, my father worked for most of his life, on the assembly line as a job setter. I don't know if they still have that position anymore. Well, he's passed away now. It's interesting. This is a report from the News Herald, which is the voice of Downriver, that just came out on Wednesday on their website. We've been mentioning investments by businesses all around. Ford announced some investment, too, in another plant just outside the Detroit area, a significant amount of dollars. But in this case, Fiat Chrysler is going to make this $74.7 million investment in Trenton Engine. Starting in the third quarter of 2017, they hope to have four-cylinder engines made there. For years, they always made big V8s or their slant six-cylinder engine, which was a heck of an engine for its time back in the 60s and 70s in through the 80s. So now they're switching to more gasoline-friendly engines there. That upgrade is going to be possible, especially because the Michigan Strategic Fund, which is part of the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, MEDC, not MDEQ, not our environmental department, no. The Michigan Economic Development Corporation, which has been harshly criticized by the conservative think tank in Michigan, the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, because they don't think any business, and I agree with them, I rarely agree with them, but they don't think any business should get a tax cut, a tax break. I mean, all businesses, if they're going to do business here, they should pay what they owe. That's the wild and radical, or in this case, I guess, reactionary, since it's conservative think tank saying it. And so who knows how much is that money? It's about a 10%. It's $770,000. So less than $100,000 of a almost $75 million construction plant. So I do think that Ford might also approach the Michigan Strategic Fund ask for some money for their campus, which they haven't done yet. But they could also use their lawyers to ask for less property taxes, temporary rebates or discounts or whatever you want to call it, or exemptions. I mark my words, they will. Why? Because they've got 60 lawyers, I understand, or more, who are working full-time there, and they've got to keep them busy. I mean, they got to keep them busy saving money for Ford Motor, as long as they've got so many working for them directly. And I understand that. Every business would love to have a team of lawyers finding ways to do business cheaper. Everybody would. So we'll see how that goes. But this is a question for you listeners who are Dearborn residents. What would you be in accord with? First of all, the renewal of the 3.5 mils will mean you don't pay any more than what you're paying now. Okay? You say, well, my home value is going up. Yeah, but because of the Henley Amendment, which was passed back in the state back in, the 90s, it could only go up a fraction each year, a small fraction of what we've had for growth of property increases here in Dearborn. So it won't catch up for like 10 years to what your property value really is worth, the way things are going. Meanwhile, City of Dearborn is sacrificing, and you don't have to pay that extra money that your property is actually worth. Am I in favor of the Headley Amendment? No, not at all. It is totally unworkable in this economic situation. So Mayor O'Reilly, I think, and I'm only guessing, but since he said he was in favor of consumption tax especially, that would be a sales tax, but also, perhaps, an income tax. an income tax of 1% or 1.5%, which I think is the maximum any city can charge in Michigan. It's a constitutional thing in Michigan. Cities can ask for up to 1.5%, but no more. I think that's true. City of Detroit, I believe, has gone all the way. And if you work in Detroit, you know you got to pay that 1.5% income tax each year. You have to file a city income tax form in addition to state and federal. I like that idea of an income tax because we have a lot of, especially with this new Ford campus, a lot of people who are making a lot of money in Dearborn. Maybe they don't live here, but they work here. And I think, you know, we're certainly a more upscale community than a few others around us. And I think 1%, 1.5% wouldn't hurt those people who are making the big bucks. You say, what about the people at lower levels? Well, you know, income tax is a lot smaller if you're making a lot less money. I mean, the term total number of dollars is a lot less. It'll also be not that noticeable because it'll be withholding, be taken out when withholding from your paycheck. You may not even notice 1% less. I mean, it is 1% less. But would you prefer to pay, say, an extra 10% tax on everything bought in Dearborn? Well, there's a lot of places to buy things, and I think people, even though Mayor O'Reilly sounded more like the consumption tax, the income, the tax on things purchased here would be more lucrative. I don't think it would be if it's only in Dearborn. I think people might choose to shop in nearby communities. Whether it's, department stores, that Allen Park Shopping Center is pretty big. A lot of stuff going on there. And I don't know if that's a great idea. I suggested, and it is just past tax time here, the flat tax. And I discussed that off air with Mayor O'Reilly after the show. He seemed to be aware of it, that would completely do away with income tax. There could be a state version, too, that would do away with state income tax. So, but it would do away with the IRS, do away with any withholding from your check. You get that approximate 30% every week or every 2 weeks, whenever you're paid in your check. But everything you buy would actually, they'd have to collect about 23% sales tax on top of whatever you're paying now. And in Michigan, you know, it's a 6% sales tax. And Mayor O'Reilly said, well, you know, I think that would cause a lot of black market to jump up. In other words, people selling things to people directly without going through official recorded transactions. But part of flat tax is, it's true, there's no tax on selling used items. So I'm not so worried about that. I think it would cost a lot less to police black market sales than it would to run the IRS, which is a huge cost. And it would work out with that 23% consumption tax, sales tax nationally, it would work out exactly the same as what you have to pay now. But no exemptions, no deductions. Okay. No funny things happening no big lawyer teams of tax accountants can make any changes. And so everybody has to pay the tax instead of an income tax, this fair tax, whenever they buy anything. But you say, what about the poor people? That's a big chunk. That's not 1%. That's 23%. Well, poor people will actually get everybody, including the rich people, will get a prebate check every month equal to the amount of tax that people at the poverty level would pay on the things that they buy, which is usually necessities of life. Okay, food, room and board, maybe transportation. Okay, so that's calculated, and those checks would come to everybody, no matter rich or poor. So it would help the poor people certainly make up for the fact that, first of all, at their jobs, literally, they don't have to have, they won't have any withholding. Okay, all that money they get every week. But when they go to buy stuff, everything they buy, unless it's a used product, in other words, you go to a Goodwill store, and guess what? You don't pay any sales tax under the fair tax proposal because it's all used items. Okay? I think that's great for recycling my daughter, as a school teacher, has to have a business on the side in order to survive. She only has one child, my granddaughter. But, you know, there's costs. And they said, as a teacher, she's had her pay cut for the last several years and her benefits cut. No thank you to Southfield Public Schools and the state of Michigan legislature and the governor. So she has a small business in recycling, fixing up old furniture. And a lot of people put furniture out for the trash people to pick up. Well, she goes around early mornings before she goes into school and picks up some of these items and fixes them, paints them up, makes them look really pretty, and she has a little store. I won't mention where. It'd be a commercial. But I'm just saying, I don't think anybody at where she has her stall in that sort of antiques facility, I don't think anybody there under a fair tax would have to have people pay tax because they're buying recycled items. Even though they've been fixed up, they're not new. And so that would do a lot for saving and preserving the good things we already have. It would be an awful lot cheaper, 23% cheaper, to buy used things because there wouldn't be that tax there. And with the prebate, I think that's why they call it the fair tax. And before it's put in place, they totally do away with the 14th Amendment, which created the IRS. Got to get that out of there, gone forever. Okay? And they put this in place instead. Now, that could be done in Michigan, by the way. There is a Fair Tax Michigan effort that's starting so that the income tax in Michigan, which is 4.25%, would be gone. And how would they make up the difference? They'd add 1% to the sales tax from 6% to 7%. No, it goes up to, I think it goes up 3%. So do you think that's a good, I think it goes to 9%. Total for sales tax, if you don't have to pay any longer the 4.2% tax on your income. So you follow that? I know it's kind of hard on the radio to see these numbers floating around in your head, but I think the fair tax, both at the state and the federal level, is a great idea. There's been a lot of research done, a lot of studies for over 20 years. And even though Mayor O'Reilly is totally against the concept because he thinks it would encourage a black market, in which, if everybody buys black market all the time, then, I don't know how it could be brand new stuff. That, there's going to be a lot of people stealing new stuff out of the warehouses and then trying to sell it. I can't figure out how black market would really work here. Also, people, if you don't like those illegal immigrants, no one could escape paying those 23% taxes from legitimate businesses, unless they bought used items or they were doing illegal things. And you don't want to have illegal behavior going on, but I don't think it would be that hard to police it. I really don't think so. And you say you don't like that 23% figure? Okay. Well, if you can figure out a way for the government to reduce its cost, and since almost half the cost of federal government is our war economy, more than all of the top 30 other countries in the world spend on war and war making, we must be really insecure, And that policeman of the world thing, even Donald Trump has been saying in the last couple days, I hate to say anything favorable here, but even he had been shocking some of the neocons and probably Hillary, who is very definitely in favor of war whenever we can get it. I'm sorry, that's my interpretation. She was for the first Iraq war. She was for the second invasion of Afghanistan. And she probably thinks war in Syria is a good idea, too, I believe. So where are you going to, you know, who are you going to believe here? But it would take major changes. So I don't know if the city of Dearborn by itself can institute a sales tax that wouldn't chase business out of Dearborn. But I do think an income tax in Dearborn would go after the right people and would sort of balance out. I mean, you know, we're losing the 3.5 millage on property tax. We're going to try to reinstate that same total of money coming in each year with a 1% or maybe the full way, 1.5% income tax. And by golly, I think that that sounds good to me. You might say, well, what if I'm on a fixed income, a pension? Do I have to pay that? Yeah, you do if you live in Dearborn. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you do anyway, unless the city of Dearborn makes an exemption somehow. So I'm not sure about how that work out. But those are discussions that are going to be happening at the city council level. And since we don't get regular reporters going to the city council level, you need to follow that. Get the point here? So I'm proud to say that I broke the story first that there's going to have to be a new tax in Dearborn. You can call a replacement tax, or maybe it'll have to be a little bit more because we're losing that personal property tax from the businesses too, at the same time that the 3.5 mil additional millage is expiring. And costs are always going up. So it's a difficult time, but we want to keep Dearborn in good shape, I think, right? All right. We're going to take a little break here on the new WHFR Journal. Since I've talked enough, you want to hear a different sound. So here's a couple comments from Jim Hightower.
Wow, $5 billion. That's the stunning amount that Goldman Sachs has agreed to pay to settle federal criminal charges over its shameful financial scams that helped wreck America's economy in 2008. That's a lot of gold, even for Goldman. Yet, the Wall Street powerhouse says it's, quote, pleased to swallow this sour slug of medicine. Is that because its executives are contrite? Oh, come on. Banksters don't do contrite. Rather, they are pleased with the settlement because, thanks to backroom dealing with friendly prosecutors, it's riddled with special loopholes that could eliminate nearly $2 billion from the publicized punishment. For example, the deal calls for the felonious bank to put $250 million into affordable housing. But generous federal negotiators put incentives and credits in the fine print that will let Goldman escape with paying out less than a third of that. Also, about $2.5 billion of the settlement is to be paid to consumers hurt by the financial crisis. But the deal lets the banks deduct almost $1 billion of this payout from its corporate tax, meaning you and I will subsidize Goldman's payment. As a bank reform advocate puts it, the problem with these settlements is that they are carefully crafted more to conceal than to reveal to the American public what really happened here. This is Jim Hightower saying, one more reason Wall Street bankers privately wink and grin at these seemingly huge punishments is that even paying the full $5 billion would only be relatively painful. To you and me, that sounds like a crushing number. But Goldman Sachs raked in $33 billion in revenue last year alone, so it's a reasonable cost of doing business. After all, Goldman sold tens of billions of dollars in the fraudulent investment packages leading to the settlement. So the bottom line is that crime can actually pay if it's big enough.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
You're listening to the new WHFR Journal on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. A great blues show coming up at 2 o'clock today. Kitty Love takes to the airwaves, and we have Eric Goebel and the Flying Crowbars. Yes, and they're setting up right now. Kitty Love is plugging things in right across from me here. It's all very exciting. I love things that plug in. And it's going to be a great performance live on the air during Kitty Love's Highway 61 show from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock today, whenever they get set up after air checks and so on. So it won't be the full 2 hours, but we'll have a great time with her show. And following, of course, another great show, another great blues show, Mike Holloway's Go With The Flow show from 4 to 6 p.m. Stay tuned for a fantastic Friday afternoon blues extravaganza. Absolutely. We were talking before Jim Hightower about the fiscal year 17 budget in Dearborn and also its projection. That's part of it. You can get a copy of that yourself by going to cityofdearborn.org and downloading the PDF file, and you can print it out, or you, I think that's the only way we can get it. Well, obviously, you don't have to print it out. You can read it on your computer screen, too, if you prefer. But here are the dates briefly, and it's also on that website, cityofdearborn.org, for the future sessions, and the public is invited to attend any or all of these at the Dearborn Administrative Center. April 27th has already passed. The interesting Wednesday night was the police. They talked about the police. Got a couple stories, breaking stories from yesterday that I'm going to mention about that. They've already made it into major media, though, so you've probably already heard that if you listen to corporate media. May 9th is the next one after that, so after about 10 days, it's Neighborhood Services and the Library are going to be talked about on May 9th. May 11th, Recreation, just 2 days later, the Recreation Department. May 16th, the Department of Public Works, the Court, Historical Commission, and the Museum on May 16th. And on May 23rd, Fire Department, okay? And 6 p.m., the west entrance of the Dearborn Administrative Center on those dates. And again, the dates are at thecityofdearborn.org. Definitely get a copy of the city budget proposal and read it. It does take a while to read it closely enough to try to figure out what they're talking about. And by the way, the proposed budget for the city, I'm not sure I said last week, is $113 million that they're going to have to spend. Most of that's on personnel salaries, benefits, and so on, but $113 million. That's an increase from the 2016 budget of $108 million. So about $5 million increase, so it's about a 4.5% increase. That's about what inflation is these days. I think you're going to get some great services out of it you didn't before, because they're hiring a number of, well, it's interesting, the number of full-time people. They're not having as many part-time people. And the full-time people, in several cases, have jobs that overlap several different areas. At least that's the way I read it. And I think that's good use of their time. Again, making them full-time people means that all those tasks get their full attention. And I think that's a great thing to do. Okay. Oh, and also, I don't know if you mentioned, but I think we did. Customer water and sewage bill in Dearborn overall together will decrease 1.4% in the 2017 proposal. Just the way things are working. We're still paying for that combined sewer overflow project, which is going to continue on until about 2030 or something. I don't have the date. Mayor O'Reilly last week told us when that's going to be done. That's, you know, $350 million, give or take $50 million proposal that had to be done. And we're also upgrading, though, our infrastructure, our water lines, too, and our streets in many areas in Dearborn all at the same time. So it's actually money pretty well spent that we need to do anyway. All right. Other story from the past is local candidates we announced last week. Because the deadline passed for the putting your name on the ballot. And so we've already started scheduling people for this show. Abby Bazzi, Dearborn attorney Abby Bazzi, running for the 19th District Court, is scheduled to be on this show and in the future, near future. And Gene Hunt is going to be here too. We have not gotten a date from Susan DeBaggia right now. But also, before the primary, and it's because three of them, it's going to be narrowed down in the primary on August 2nd in Dearborn to only two. Two will battle for the judgeship in November election. So somebody's going to be eliminated there. So we're going to have all three on. Also, on the Republican side, running for 15th District Michigan Representative, George Doraney's current position. He's term limited. He's going to be... This is last year. He has to leave. I hate term limits. I am not for term limits. That was a bad idea. We have nothing but, I'm sorry, amateurs. It's my strongly stated opinion. In most every case, amateurs who run and get elected. Now, George Doraney, not quite an amateur. He was on Dearborn City Council for a couple of terms, I believe, before he ran for that. And he's a nice person, and he's learned a lot. But even Gary Warrenchuk, who was a newspaper editor at the Press and Guide when they had editors in the olden days, and so he was constantly connected with politics and government and so on, even he went there, and in his first term, he said, I didn't know what the heck was going on. I mean, he admitted that on the air on our show. After his three terms were up, after his 6 years were up, he said, I'm only now just getting to understand how to do the job effectively for the people of Dearborn. And they forced him out, of course. So when I'm talking about amateurs, I'm talking basically about newbies, and there's a lot of things to learn when you get actually in that situation. Otherwise, you're a pawn for the lobbyist, you're a pawn for your party. You can't really say or do anything uniquely that you want to. I'm sorry. That's what Warrenchuk has said, and even George Durrani. Although Durrani said a bigger problem, and that is that he's in the with a minority party. And all I can do is try to say no and vote no, and the Republicans just pass it right over. And we have a story about that in a minute. I'm going to share with you something else he was in favor of, and it didn't happen. But it should have. So we have to wait here on the Journal until May 15th because the city clerk's office, is Mary Buddha retired already? Has said they won't give the name and address to us so we can get in touch with the three Republican candidates and six Democratic candidates for the primary in August until around May 15th. So as soon as we find a way to contact those people, we will schedule them. And we're just going to do 30 minutes a person on this show, hopefully live on Fridays. Although we might pre-record a couple if there's really terrible time problems. And give you an idea, because we think those are the two crucial issues to be decided in the primary in August first. And then, of course, some of those people that we talk to will actually be the ones running for the office in November. Somebody's got to win, right? So if you are running, if you're one of those people running for Republican or Democratic representatives in the primary election of August 2nd, you can contact WHFR yourself. Don't wait till May 15th. Contact me, Jay Koronek. And you can do that simply by an email. I'm going to make it as simple as possible to WHFR. It's WHFR at hfcc.edu. And just put in the subject line, Journal Show, or WHFR Journal, or Request for to Jay. And my first name is J-A-Y. Okay? Don't worry about spelling Koronek. I know that's maybe a challenge. I'll get back in touch with you. Give us your phone number. Obviously, we'll get your email that way. And we'll schedule you for the first available Friday upcoming. And of course, we only have through July because August 2nd is the election, even before Dearborn Homecoming. So, and people start doing their absentee ballots early in July, July 2nd. I assume even before the 4th of July, they'll probably be able to get absentee ballots. So contact us directly, WHFR at hfc.edu. And we're going to try to have some challenging questions for you, and they'll be the same questions for pretty much, although follow-up questions may differ, but pretty much the same questions for each one of these candidates. That should be a lot of fun. You know, one of the Republicans running for office is a wrestler from the Dearborn area of 21 years. Talk about a newbie in politics. I'm sorry, but that ought to be fun. I'm going to put this person on the far side of the table and lean back so he can't physically overpower me here during the interview if he decides to be interviewed on our show. Speaking of elections, this coming Tuesday, May 3rd, there is a special election for additional millage. Oh, excuse me, not a millage. It's a bond proposal. $35 million bond proposal that would help improve things at the schools in Crestwood School District. J. Dearborn Heights. Okay, so if that's your school district, you need to go and consider whether or not you want to support that bond proposal. Okay, voters over there in that area have not approved any funding proposals since Crestwood High School was built more than 50 years ago. After a handful of failed bond requests, the district has not asked the community to consider a levy, in nearly 10 years. Crestwood business manager Brian April said that if approved, the bond will be financed over 25 years at an initial rate of 3.5 mil. So, yeah, it is a millage. So that's expected to cost the average homeowner less than $20 a month. Okay, but that's a lot of stuff there have to replace and fix up in those schools. And I don't know how much more deserving they could be for these kinds of things. Okay. If you send your kids to any schools in Crestwood and you're not supporting this, my opinion, not telling you how to vote, but it's going to be on your conscience if it fails. Because your kids, I think, from my reading of what's got to be replaced here, are going to be getting, are going to be very challenged in their school environment. Let me just put it that way. Okay? But you can vote however you want to, but vote. Don't pass it up and say, well, it's bound to pass, or it's bound to go down. Whatever. You need to be there, people in Dearborn Heights. So that's next Tuesday. The usual times. Was it 7 in the morning until 8 p.m. at night? Okay. Now, here's a story about George Duraney. And it's a story that's out of frustration, but Representatives George Duraney from Dearborn and Stephanie Chang from Detroit testified before the House Tax Policy Committee today as the committee considered House Bills 5557 and 5558, which is legislation to allow AK Steel, formerly called Severstal Steel, but was sold to the AK people, through its Dearborn Works facility to continue to claim a mega tax, that stands for something, MEGA, tax credit that were awarded to the previous operator facility. Specifically, the representatives urged the adoption of an amendment to HB 5557 to require the company to fully comply with state and federal environmental regulations and to annually assess their pollution control efforts. Unfortunately, the amendment narrowly failed. Guess who made it fail on that committee? That's right, Republicans. Duraney said this, quote, I recognize the need to attract and retain businesses in all areas of the state, and I praise AK Steel for providing good-paying jobs, said Duraney, whose district includes the Dearborn Works. However, when a company receives tax credits, I believe it has a responsibility to be a good corporate citizen and in good standing and rectify any negative outstanding issues the business might have. And we've reported on the show that it seemed like they were making progress to fix some of the things that were complaints about pollution from the previous owners, Severstal. Well, guess what? Since AK Steel started it, there have been notable pollution issues arising from their operation, many of which date back to Severstal's operation. So they haven't cleaned up the act that was going on before them. And although AK Steel has addressed many of these issues, persistent pollution issues remain a major concern. For example, just last November, AK Steel received a notice of violation regarding sulfur dioxide monitoring. Michigan is currently 1 year overdue for submitting a plan to the federal government on how to come into compliance with federal standards for sulfur dioxide. After defeat of the amendment, the committee voted in favor of both bills, sending them to the House floor, which means, again, AK Steel, even still causing pollution, still having pollution problems for this area, is going to get a tax break, it looks like. I know there's got to be something passing in the Senate, in the state Senate, and then, of course, our good old Governor Snyder, he's got to sign it into law. I understand the process, but the odds are, unless the Democrats can rally in the Senate, they're not a majority, but maybe they'll get a few Republicans who are of good ethical conscience. I mean, I thought this was the pure Michigan idea. I thought Pure Michigan was a fantastic idea, right? And that would be what? Pure water, pure air, pure food produced in Michigan, right? At least. And we're the laughingstock of the world. Okay, specifically about Flint. Now, what was the story just this morning? Farmington schools have reported, because they tested their water, is that they have above the minimum safe levels of lead in their water in their schools. Again, perhaps because of the older lines that run into the schools from the main lines in Farmington. And we're very, very aware now of what the needs are. Now, the pollution levels are above that 15 parts per billion. I believe that's the figure. And in Dearborn, remember, the city's water that comes to in front of our houses, when it gets into the house, it might have some lead in it because of the pipes that run from the street to the house, which is not the city of Dearborn's responsibility, by the way. Mm-mm. They don't own those pipes. The homeowners do. But nonetheless, I'm saying they're finding high lead levels elsewhere, and it is a concern. So this whole Pure Michigan thing is pretty much a PR disaster. I'm sure they're going to have to change that little campaign in the near future, although license plates still talk about it. But it's just a joke. It's a joke everywhere in the world, Pure Michigan. And so what's happening here is that our representatives, thank you very much, is going to make sure that AK Steel is going to get tax credits here, but not have to clean up their act or the act that they inherited either. And even in terms of sulfur dioxide poisoning in our atmosphere, which is another concern, Michigan hasn't even submitted after a year late. Was that because the MDEQ is so incompetent or because our governor is so incompetent to the federal government? And so I guess Seversol doesn't care about doing any monitoring because the state of Michigan doesn't care about monitoring. Well, this is a joke. So that's the story. That's true. It's a press release from Representatives Duraney and Chang, both Democrats from this area. Duraney from Dearborn area and Stephanie Chang from Detroit. But that's what they tried to do, which seems totally logical and necessary to me, and they were turned down. I don't have to vilify any single person. It's a Republican premise. It is. Business uber alles. Even if it's poisoning us, apparently. They don't learn. Okay. A couple more stories here. If you caught the news, Department of Justice has responded to Dearborn Police Department's request. That's Police Chief Ron Hadid, who asked them for assistance in reviewing the city's practice. It's good to have an outside team, and they have actually formed a team at the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C., that are going around the country, in fact, looking at different police departments and making recommendations. Of course, there were two shootings, if you will, at least, justified or not, still being investigated. And I have to say, I would have asked Mayor O'Reilly at this point, Lee, too, what takes so long? What is there to be investigated? If there was video, how long does it take to watch the video? It's not 2 months of video. It's probably no more than 10 or 15 minutes of video. How many times do you want to watch it? How many people are involved? A dozen? A couple dozen? How much time does it take to interview for an hour or maybe two each, a dozen people? To me, unless you have one part-time person working on it, it should only take about a week or so. And then they have to write a report. But what's going on here? Why does it take 3 weeks? I mean, 3 months. 3 months since December and the first shooting. Now, you can't blame the Dearborn Police Department on this because, one is being investigated, one shooting by the city of Detroit. Again, outside team investigated, that seems appropriate, and the other one is being investigated by the Michigan State Police. It was sort of under their, it was the woman that was shot driving her car, trying to drive away, or trying to drive into Dearborn police people. She was unarmed, but anyway, she died. I just wondered. I'm sure all the various groups that have asked for these investigations to proceed, why does it take so many darn months? Why? I mean, just give me a list of what activities you're doing. And how many people you have assigned to this task. People want to know. I mean, this is not responsive. Anyway, the DOJ has got it. How long is it going to take them? But that's okay to ask them for advice. And it has to be pretty good advice from that level. And again, it's from a group at the DOJ that is looking into these individual local police departments around the country that have issues. And that, again, Dearborn's police department, Chief Haddad has requested that. Back in January, he requested, and they've just said yes. However, Channel 7 Action News, the TV station in Detroit, actually had enough corporate media money to do a survey of 180 officers, lieutenants, and sergeants who work for Dearborn Police. Of the 180, 124 responded to the 78-page document. Okay. So, first of all, I have to say, they must have spent a lot of money on that. 78 pages of questions. It is amazing that 124 responded. That's about two-thirds. That's a pretty good response rate. For 78 pages of questions. Now, 109 of the 124 responded said that department morale was rated under a 3. I guess that's out of 10. I don't know. Is it 3 out of 5? That doesn't say here. Shame on you, Arab American News. I know I should have read the Channel 7 article on their website, I guess. But, oh well. And under what you would change, many directed their anger at the chief, calling for his job and other top brass. But, of course, they don't say how many are. That sounds like a President Bill Clinton question. How many is many? What do you mean by is? Mm-hmm. Okay. He said, Mayor Jack O'Reilly, in the story from Arab American News, is defending Chief Haddad, who has been at the head of the department since 2007. He said citizen complaints, use of force, and officer-involved accidents have dropped dramatically, actually. O'Reilly dismissed the findings of the survey. This is not the way to solve anything, O'Reilly said. Direct quote here. It was done deliberately for political motives and not because they want to improve the situation. What's the political motive of Channel 7 Action News? Higher ratings. Anything that is scandalous, you know, kicks up dirt, has higher ratings. I don't, you know, I'm surprised that the police department, which I know the Detroit Police Department is sort of a gag order they always have on their officers, that those officers, without approval from their bosses, can't make any comments to the media, to the journalists. And I don't know if they can in Dearborn. Isn't this kind of like making a comment? Now, the survey could have been anonymous. Maybe it was submitted anonymously so that nobody knows who those 124 officers were. We're not sure about that. But under what is driving morale problems, some officers answered mismanagement of resources, disconnect between officers and management, lack of training, and no emphasis of police work. I'm not sure what that means, no emphasis of police work. There's some lack of grammatical... there's some grammatical problems in that story in the Arab News, Arab American News. So watch that, folks. Get yourself an English teacher there, because I can't figure out exactly what the story is. Also, one of the last stories today, as we get ready for Highway 61, you might be able to hear them tuning up in the background for the big blues performance today. Eric Goebel and the Flying Crowbars are going to be here. Looking at the Fermi plant, Fermi Monroe, beautiful. Beautiful Fermi, 30 years after Chernobyl. If you are old enough to remember, Fermi 1, the first nuclear plant down there, because there's more than one. There's Fermi 2, and they're trying to get Fermi 3 going still. It was finished in 63, but by 66, Fermi 1 suffered a partial meltdown, which was inspired the... was probably, by the way, the best-known nuclear incident in the U.S. at the time. It inspired the book We Almost Lost Detroit, which in turn inspired Gil Scott-Heron to write a song by that name. For its part, Detroit Edison, now DTE Energy, published a book called We Did Not Almost Lose Detroit. By the way, I don't think that was a book. I never got it as a book. It was a pamphlet. It was a 20-page document. And it was, we did not almost lose Detroit. And it sounded like they were saying, and these are my words, we almost lost Detroit, but we did not almost lose Detroit. We almost lost it, but not almost. See what I'm saying? You think we did? Yeah, okay. You have people in the studio here which are causing trouble for us. Anyway, author John G. Fuller, by the way, who wrote We Almost Lost Detroit, which is still available out there if you want to read the details of what happened every hour down at Fermi 1 in 1966, and why is it shuttered? Do you put shutters on a nuclear reactor? You close it down. You seal it off. It's got to be sealed for 250,000 years. Or the very radioactive gas is going to get out, and depending on how the wind is blowing at that point, it could, if it spreads out evenly, destroy 60%, kill 60% of the population within 2 weeks from Detroit through Toledo, out to Ann Arbor. And this area couldn't be lived in for about 200,000 years beyond that. So Fermi 1 is still a problem. And we just hope somebody keeps it sealed. Put another coat of paint on it, at least, I think. Plans for Fermi 2 were announced in 68 and took 20 years to bring the plant from concept to full commercial power production. It was built by the same type of General Electric reactor design as the now famous Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. So not exactly the best of designs. Hopefully we won't have an earthquake or a tsunami wave hitting in Monroe like it did in Japan. By the way, what am I talking from here? This is a story in the Metro Times. From when? Yesterday. It's on their website. It may not be in the paper this week, but it's from their website. It's a great story. Michael Jackman, not Jackson, the musician, looking at the Fermi plant 30 years after Chernobyl. Well, we got to go, folks. I hope you've had fun. Hope you've been taking notes, and you're going to go and do stuff like read the whole proposed budget for the city of Dearborn, all 11 pages, go to some of those hearings. Keep reading the newspapers as best you can if they ever publish any stories that really dig deeply enough to reveal the facts. And take care out there. That's all for the new WHFR Journal now. This is Jay Koronick saying goodbye. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Twins.